city. Born in power here. Big fish. Change anything that needs to be changed. Politics, progress, game boards, objects, view like pawns to be change up our mindset. Value of the dollars at the center of this conflict. Their lives only matter if they serve to make a profit. But if a midget sees further on the shoulders of the giant, then we should see further than the tyrant and build a future within alliance where success is our science in the quest to go higher. It's the heart of the city. Wake up, world. You are listening to The Heart of the City. Happy Wednesday. I am your host, Malik Boyd. I hope that wherever you are in good spirits and all is well. The show topic today, the ball is in your court. My guest, Tim Green, legendary referee, WNBA, D-League, NCAA. He trains referees. The Sixers have him doing their training camps. I mean, this guy has not only set the bar for refereeing and what the next generation of referees looks like. As you'll learn about his story, he has an amazing story, but also amazing heart for training the next generation of referees and ensuring that the culture of the sport continues to progress and move forward. You'll hear so much more from him on this show. But as always, we start our show off in prayer. If you're in the Philadelphia area, you heard about the constant shootings that have occurred, the young woman getting shot in the neck. I mean, the list goes on, and I'm sure in your city, wherever you are listening, you have issues as well dealing with crimes and matters of the heart, because we believe these are heart issues at the end of the day. And to that end, Pastor Kevin Brown from the Perfecting Church in Washington Township, New Jersey, is on the line to give us our prayer for the city. Pastor Brown, how are you doing today, brother?
I'm doing well. Good afternoon. It's a privilege to be on with you guys today.
It's a privilege to have you lead us in prayer. And so we're going to lean on you to take us into our two-minute prayer for the city.
Yep. Heavenly Father, we rest and rejoice in your sovereign plan for the greater Philadelphia region. We find comfort in your promise that the gates of hell will not prevail against your church, and that you are building your church with your own divine hands. Father God, we also pray that disciples would be released into all of the domains of society. God, that your plan for the Philadelphia region would be accomplished. You said, Lord God, that you've called us to baptize and lead people into relationship with you, teaching them to observe all that you've commanded us to do. And Lord, you've also told us how to do that, by loving you with all our heart, all our mind, all our strength, and loving our neighbors as ourselves. Would you enlarge our view of our neighbors, God, that it goes beyond people that look like, think like, vote like, and act like us? And would you cause us to see our neighbors as every and anyone nearby, that we would extend our love and your love to them as you freely extended your love to us. God, we're believing you for a great awakening and an outburst of love and restoration in the city of Philadelphia. And we touch and agree over that now by faith in the mighty, matchless name of Jesus.
Wow. Hey. Man, listen, I took notes at the beginning of that prayer. We rest and rejoice in your sovereign plan. Listening to the audience, that does not mean that you become lazy about it. The rest comes with comfort, understanding what he has planned for your life. The rejoicing part is knowing that it will be fulfilled as you also do your part. That's Pastor Kevin Brown from the Perfecting Church. Pastor, tell us where we can worship with you in your ministry.
Absolutely. We meet at the Performing Arts Center on the campus of Washington Township High School in Sewell, New Jersey. We begin our service every Sunday at 9 a.m. with a welcome and a continental breakfast for our guests and our members. And then our pre-service prayers at 9:45, and then we begin with worship and the word at 10 a.m. I'd love for you guys to join us.
Absolutely.
And be on mission together.
Absolutely. If you are in the area, please make it your business to visit this ministry, join this ministry, support this ministry. Pastor, we continue to pray for God's blessings on your life and the life of the body of the Perfecting Church.
Amen. I greatly appreciate that. We're in the middle of a series right now called Hear Our Cry, and we're literally crying out for our cities, for the plan of God to be done in and through our lives. So if your listeners would like to jump on and tag along with us, they can do that at theperfectingchurch.org.
Theperfectingchurch.org. Make sure you check them out and continue to support Pastor Kevin Brown. You have a blessed week and a beautiful weekend, Pastor.
Thank you. And thanks again for the privilege of praying for our city.
Absolutely. And so we go into our EKG session, and that probably needs some prayer too. We need to bring Pastor back and pray over this. The issue of the day, we're talking about Colin Kaepernick and the recent comments made by Michael Vick. So the neighborhood's in an uproar. My Facebook page today, we started talking about this, and we have been going non-stop. The fact of the matter is that there are some who are disappointed but not surprised. In fact, the comment was, unfortunately, we are our worst enemies. Then there are some that said, look, Mike Vick's comments, we consider that being a house Negro. There are some that said, look, Shannon Sharp had a very animated response to Mike Vick, and the response on the show to really listen and pay attention to was that of Skip Bayless, because Skip normally says a lot of crazy things. But on this topic, he had a great point. It's not about right or wrong. It's not about talent in this situation. The NFL owners are older white men who think like older white men. And although it may not be right, it's real. And I'm going to dig into that, because that I believe in that point wholeheartedly. I had some conversation with our producers about this in the green room. Some other comments. If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. Kaepernick is standing firm in his beliefs, not his emotions. And he's not kowtowing to the NFL. Vic is stuck in the establishment and is now their puppet. Major comment. Brother Kevin G says, I think we're giving too much attention to him and his comments. He doesn't move the needle forward, so why are we even entertaining? Al Spivey says, no one should comment unless they look at the entire interview in which he made the comments. That being said, I know what he was trying to say, but it missed the mark badly. I agree. Brother Tommy Blackwell says, look, I love Mike Vick, but what he's done is perpetuated a stereotype that black people should be judged according to the way they look. We all know that to be true. The fact of the matter is, all of us judge everybody based on look and stereotype and perception. The truth of the matter is that we suffer the most from the misjudgments that occur. Stu Bono says, look, I mean, the guy didn't mug the man. He didn't break into his home. He didn't attack his wife or children. He just expressed an opinion. What is the big deal? Jeesh. And I think it really wasn't a big deal. It was just a comment made by one person out of, you know, hundreds of thousands that could have made a comment. However, the media took this thing and ran with it. Marlon Veal says, I think Mike was speaking from a place of experience. He was trying to tell him the best advice he knew. I think those two words are very critical. He knew in relationship to what he experienced personally trying to get back into the league. I don't think he made or meant any harm by his comments. I agree with Marlon on that. I do not think Mike Vick had any ill intent towards Colin Kaepernick. I know there are those who are extremely animated about this particular topic, and they believe Vick was trying to trash him because he's not in the league and Colin has the front wheel right now as it relates to the PR machine. But the truth of the matter is, and this is my point, drumroll please, the reality is none of us have hit the NFL field at any given point, right? So all of this is armchair quarterbacking. All of it. It's Wednesday morning quarterbacking, if we're going to be real about it. The other part of this, and this goes back to why we always talk about ownership. And I'm pausing because I don't want to say this improperly, but the truth of the matter is we don't own any of those teams. It's just what it is. So in the owner circle are conservative white men who have agreed that the culture of the NFL should look a particular way. Because there are no minorities in ownership, when they're having those ownership conversations determining what their league should look like, I'm not sure if Colin Kaepernick fits their bill. And so what Mike Vick was saying was, look, dude, I've done worse than you and I've gotten back. Here's a tool that I've used to get back. Let's take a look at it. Now, he might have been better off saying that at the cigar bar or one-on-one on the golf course. Absolutely. On Fox, might not have been the best vehicle. Because individuals then attacked his past rather than looking at the issue that he was discussing. And I do believe Colin Kaepernick or no one else should have to change their hair, change their attire, or anything else in order to play the gift that, or play the game that God has given them a gift to play. The fact of the matter is, unfortunately, the final decision does not rest on whether or not he has a God-given gift, but it rests on whether or not the conservative white owners believe that Colin Kaepernick, his afro, his knees, his stance is what they want in their stadiums. That's the truth. And so until we own, we are always going to have less of a say and really just have the armchair response. That's why ownership is so important. And let's take a look at this, because I don't think that we should even be mad at Mike Vick. At least Mike Vick had a comment about it, whether you like him or not, whether you like the comment or not. At least he had the kahunas to stand up and say something about it. I'm more frustrated with the rest of the league, the individuals who play on the field with Colin Kaepernick, who have been totally silent in this process. Yes, there were some that took a knee and then they realized Colin might have went too far. And if you notice, they started backing up. They didn't stand with him. They didn't say, hey, you know what? He deserves to be in this league. The fact of the matter is, yes, you know, he had a dismal season, but the 49ers have had a bad season. I mean, let's take a look at it. I mean, he's being shunned, and there's 20 other quarterbacks who have been signed so far, including guys like Mike Glennon, who got a 3-year, $45 million contract from the Chicago Bears, but he only threw 11 passes the past two seasons. Josh McCown, who signed a 1-year, $6 million contract with the Jets, even though he's 37 and played for the one-win Cleveland Browns. What about Geno Smith, who received $1.2 million for a one-year contract from the Giants after a horrible showing with the Jets? All I'm saying is they get to call the shots because we don't own it. And guess what? You're still going to watch it. That's the bigger problem. We're still going to tune into the NFL. We're still going to cheer on our teams and maybe have these conversations in the barbershop and on Facebook. That's the bigger issue. The players who have decided that their check, they're going to focus on that. They're going to focus on playing. They're not going to break the cycle. They're not going to stand with Colin and say he deserves to play. And we're not showing up at training camp until you guys bring Colin Kaepernick back in, because we are tired of being on the dance floor and mastering all the dance moves, but don't ever own the dance floor or the club we're dancing in. That's the real issue. And until we address those things, we will always just have great Facebook conversations about things like Colin Kaepernick taking a knee, Colin Kaepernick, whether he cuts his hair or not. And those topics and those subjects aren't really the real root of the issue at all. The real root of the issue is when you don't own, when you do not control the full outcome, you have to deal with the climate that they let you have. Will Colin come back? We don't know. The issue is out there. This topic will go on long past this show. But I encourage all of us, if we're really serious about making sure that Colin Kaepernick gets in, then take a stand against the NFL. Maybe don't watch the NFL for a while until they prove that they're willing to change the culture. I mean, maybe not. Don't grab those season passes that you normally grab. And even though they'll try to discount those playoff tickets to get you to come back, don't take them. How about we stand our ground and cut off the dollar if we want to support Colin Kaepernick? Because outside of it, all of this is just conversation. That has been the EKG for this week. Check out Facebook. Go to my Facebook page, Malik Boyd. There's a topic up there. I'm going to leave it up for the rest of the day. Curse me out. Add some more content to it. Give us your intake and your insight on it. We want to hear from you. Go there, post. We want to know what you think about that particular issue. So the song of the week, I'll get right into it because Tim Green is actually on the line. He is traveling today, and so we want to get him in and let you guys hear from him. But the song of the week, I'm taking you back. This is 1990. I just want to prove a point. Jay-Z and some of these guys that are now coming into what we believe conscious, Teresa likes to use the term stay woke, TML's in the building. But there are guys who have been woke for a long time, and those who have understood the balance of the streets and the boardroom. To that end, I mean, Tone Loc, Michelle A, Ice-T, Dr. Dre, Eazy-E, Young MC, Digital Underground, Oaktown 357, MC Hammer. Yes, all of you are going, first of all, I don't even remember half of them. But more importantly, what could they have possibly done to talk about social conscious issues? Well, you want to hear it? Here it go. This song, this single, was made by the West Coast Rap All-Stars, a collaboration of all of those artists. The song is titled, We're All In The Same Gang. Check it out.
I'm King News, and I come to you with the truth. The mean streets took 6 more lives overnight, all the result of gangbang stupidity. By the way, you gangsters should know, one of your victims was a 3-year-old girl. Local gang members, you still don't get it, do you?
Straight up madness everywhere I look. Used to be a straight A student. Now he's a crook, robbing people just to smoke or shoot up. Used to have a crew cut, now he's a poop butt. Dropped out of school and he joins the neighborhood gang. Hanging on the street selling cane to his own people. Now when I say people, I mean color. You a stupid mother.
Sisters, since we are the mothers of this earth, it's time we start being good mothers from the birth of our children. No time for sleeping, teach them to fight and win. For the right reason, it's your time, it's your life, living. Proud to be black, young and gifted, lifted by the knowledge of taking the right route. Gang violence needs to be wiped out.
One and the same, everyone came in the same chains, caught with the same aim, brain games and names chain. Destroyed the black male crack jail and semi-automatic and static if the crack fails. So since we all talk the same slang, stop killing my brother because we're all from the same gang.
Don't you know we got to put our heads together?
Make the chance
because
we're all in the same gang.
That was Michelle A. As everybody started smiling. Oh, my gosh. Google Michelle A. You'll love it. An incredible artist. But that song, We're all in the same gang. I'm just trying to prove a point here by playing some of these records to help you understand that these issues have gone on for some time. And artists have stood out and stood up for these kind of issues. But even in that particular song, they're not talking to the cops on that one. They're talking to us. And it's time for us to stop killing each other. Like, it really is time to stop taking lives. Check out that record. We'll post it on Facebook. We're posted also on heartcityradio.com. The show is titled "The Ball is in Your Court." I've learned something about that hanging with this brother, not just on the basketball court and learning from him as a referee, but also learning from him on the golf course and sitting down and talking to him and gaining wisdom from him and his outlook on life by being one of the premier referees in the game. Again, WNBA, the D-League, the Sixers training camps, NCAA, the Danny Rump tournament. The list goes on. When you see the referees in the Danny Rump, 9 times out of 10, Tim Green knows them all or even has placed them on that floor. You'll see him scattered all throughout the WNBA and NCAA schedules. This brother has a heart for the game and a heart for his people. And I am absolutely excited to introduce to our listening audience, Tim Green. It's great to have you on the show, brother.
How you doing, brother?
Man, the lights are still on. It's half the battle. I wish we were on the golf course right now, but that's a whole nother topic. Whole nother topic.
The same thing I was thinking, brother.
Yeah, yeah. So it's great to have you on. I know that you are traveling, and so I want to dig right into this because your story is absolutely unique. Most think, I want to get into the referee game after I've exhausted my playing days, or I want to get into the referee game, you know, and I'll just do it by, some of these little league games. And I have no idea of how to elevate from the little league to the NBA or whatever their desired goal is. Your story is totally off the charts. And so, real briefly, tell the listening audience how you even got into the game of refereeing.
Well, bro, you know, sometimes I look back and try to think, like, wonder, like, it felt magical, you know? I had a 20-year military career, and near the end of my career, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do when I retired. And I was battling some injury from playing ball, and a gentleman came up to me and watched while I was playing, getting back in shape, and he basically said, "You have a gift to ref. You just don't know it yet. By the way you play ball, you see plays before they happen. You can honestly adapt to what's going on." And then I blew him off a couple of times, Malik. You know, as a ball player, you just blow him off. Mm-hmm. You know.
And refs are on the other side of the fence.
Oh, no doubt.
Right.
No doubt. So that gives me the upper hand a little bit, too, as a ref, you know, understanding that.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally embraced them, picked it up, and I was working pro basketball in Japan in less than 1 year experience.
Wow.
I worked the highest level in Japan. The NBA kept track of me. Got found at a high school camp when I came back to the States for vacation. And the NBA just kept me under their umbrella. And when I retired, they just brought me right in.
Wow.
Less than about 3 years experience.
So that's not to say that anybody can just go in and in 3 years you will be on the NBA floor. The truth is you had something that this individual saw in you. But what's critical is that you actually finally listened to what he was saying and then took time to learn under him. And what was that process like? I mean, so many people, and if we watch basketball on television, we make all the right calls. It's easy to do that from the camera angle we see. But truth be told, I mean, you had to learn how to continuously see the floor and make those calls. What was that like? What was that process?
Well, Well, let me go back real quick to about what you were saying about the gentleman listening to him, finally listening. That was my first lesson as far as listening. From that day forward, I always listened first before I thought or even wanted to make a decision on my own. So that's the first part of being a good ref.
The first part of being a good ref. Repeat that again. The first part of being a good ref is listening.
Yes. And then go from there as far as talent and as far as learning what they have to give you. Put yourself in a predicament to get better. And then your next question was what again?
So what was the process like sitting under him? I mean, ultimately, he becomes your Mr. Miyagi. He's you know, Yoda teaching you how to use the Force, right? And so what is that process like? Because yes, many of us, we get, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of education on a particular topic, and we're ready to run with it. But you sat under his tutelage for some time.
And the amazing that started in this pro league in Japan, he literally stepped back and let me be successful. He could have easily, because he was a better ref, but he saw the talent that I had, and he allowed me to get better. So on a daily basis, we connected every day, and I was like a sponge. This guy had it, you know. To be honest, I think if he didn't live in Japan, he's an American, of course. Mm-hmm. If he didn't live in Japan, I think he would be in the NBA.
Wow. Wow. So he had more talent than you, but decided I'm investing in this young man enough to give him the space to shine.
Totally.
Wow. So you come back to the States. You're doing high school, yeah. You know, just doing your thing, and the NBA is keeping track. And next thing you know, you're doing WNBA and NCAA and D-League and so many other, you know, components of refereeing in our U.S. system. What is that like for an African-American male? We see some of them on TV, right, but we try to figure out what their experience is like versus, you know, quite frankly, what we've seen in the past with so many other white referees. Is there a challenge for African Americans?
Well, you can almost tie this back into the subject you started with Kaepernick. I mean, things don't change when we, just because our job changes, we still have to deal with the same things on a daily basis.
Mm.
And if you look at the outlet of referees on whatever level, you'll see the difference. You know,
right.
You can see the numbers.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a daily challenge.
Wow. So WNBA, and I've gotten a chance to watch you officiate some of those games, and I have a healthy respect for refereeing, and I'll talk about my experience with you last summer, but it's pretty strenuous to run up and down that court. I have a new respect for referees, because I know I out with you last year, you know, 8 minutes in, I'm like, my God, where's the Gatorade? You know, when are they calling a timeout? You know, do I call a foul just so that I could get a breath? You know, what's the training like?
Well, I live a daily regimen, so no matter what's going on, I get five elliptical, swimming, something.
Hmm.
So as far as on the court, you basically want to prepare for almost like two games. So physically, if you prepare for two games, getting through one, and then you got to take in part that, you know, the game gets stressful. So you got to add that to it. So you just have to prepare for more just in a regular game.
Wow. Okay. So I can understand that. So you're doubling up your preparation in hopes of executing a great performance on the first game. And so, and I've done that with you, and I watch even when we play golf, you will actually walk the course as opposed to driving in the cart, which is what I do, which is probably why I have the gut that I have. But and so you've injected that into your daily life. And so and I'm sure that's going into diet and some of these other things because you're on the road consistently. What does it take to be a referee? Is it just about the connections? Is it just about being in the right space at the right time? Like, there are so many people that knew that you were coming on the show and wanted to really talk to you about the process of becoming a referee. If there is no Mr. Miyagi to identify me, how do I prepare for this journey?
Well, I mean, anything in life, talent has to be there. Secondly, it's about connections. Our profession is about connections, who you know, who can spring forward. And, you know, the better the connection is, the better or quicker you'll move up.
So the truth is, this is, quite frankly, a connection-based business. So to the barbershops, to the individuals who inbox me, yes, there are connections there, but talent also takes place. Now, I've watched you, and even with what you gave me, I was blessed to get a whole year of calls around specific topics. So if it was charging, you gave me a whole year of charge calls. If it was, being in a box, and you gave me all of these things, and I literally filled up a hard drive full of video clips that you gave me, and recognized that you study those just as much as I, study things in my profession. Can you hear me?
I got you now.
Okay, so. So let's talk about the video clips. I mean, you dig deep and treat them almost as if they are periodicals or encyclopedias. Is that something that a young referee or someone who's aspiring to do can do now?
Well, to be honest, Malik, that's where a lot of the referees in the inner city and areas that don't get the high level or professional, they don't get a chance to get these archives of plays. So it's almost that's honestly the best way. Well, it would be the best thing tool that I use for my profession. I literally watch these things over and over, and it becomes second nature for me.
That makes a lot of sense. So it goes to a preparation point that I think isn't just an issue for referees, but just in daily life. How much are we preparing? How much are we taking a look at those who are already in the space that we're looking to be in, or just our peers in general and how they're approaching the topic or the goal? I think that's extremely important. And so you brought up Philadelphia basketball. You are a major staple in Philadelphia basketball. Everyone knows you. There's not a court that I've been able to go to and mention your name and someone doesn't know Tim Green. What's your take on Philly basketball? Where are we right now? And where do we need to move to?
We are light years behind, like, the New Yorks or the Chicagos. Our any city referees are basically governing themselves without the knowledge. So if I'm getting on the court every day and I don't have the knowledge, I'm just basically practicing bad habits. So there's avenues such as myself. If you're serious and you want to reach out to Tim Green, I'm here for you. The guy who told me to ref told me, you have to pass this on. You have a gift. You have to pass it on. So I'm here for guys who really want it. Instead of just chasing that rec money, if you really want to get good and get the respect of the players and get respect of the city, you have to work on your craft.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'll embarrass myself. All right. So to the listening audience, I got an opportunity last year, and I want to publicly thank Tim because the refereeing that I do is more around football and has been football because that was my journey into the refereeing game. And so Tim brought me to the Sixers training camps, and this happened to be at the time that they were taking a look at individuals like the Ben Simmons of the world. And I got a chance to see basically, Tim, it might have been almost, one-third or one-fourth of the draft class come through for workouts. And you got a chance to ref all of these guys, and I got a chance to get on the court and sit, you know, through these games with you and referee with you. Those, what you did for me is something that isn't done, very rarely in politics, very rarely in the corporate arena, where someone will sit you on the game floor at the highest level and train you in that space. And so is that something that has to happen on the referee side, or and if we're doing that, when they connect with you, is it, hey, look, I'm trying to get down with the Danny Rumpf? Or is it, look, wherever you are, master your space, whether it's high school, whether it's, you know, the little league football. If you get on the court, learn from the one who's going to pass that wisdom on. Is that the formula, or is the formula get to the top as quick as possible? Because you're there.
Well, Malik, I saw something in you, and I put you in a position that I would probably never put a referee in. But I saw something in you that I felt comfortable enough to do. Majority of referees, I would never put them in that stage. I would never want to put a person in a position to fail. So I would start you, I would take what talent level you had or what you had, and I would literally put you in that setting and then train you from there.
So for all the referees who are listening who want to actually add value and bring other referees on, what Tim is saying is it's important to assess the talent. But one of the things that you said, which I think is critical, is you never want to put me in a position to fail. And you never want to put another referee in position to fail. And I think that's also a good mantra for life with mentorship. Understanding, taking the mentee and putting them in a position to fail doesn't really help them. Get them the right tools and get them the right look to move forward. And so, Tim, here's a series of questions that people asked or required or requested for us to ask of you. What happens when refs make bad calls?
Well, there's a thought process that goes through. First, it depends on the time of the game, what kind of player you put the call on or lack thereof. So there's a lot of things that come in play, but you have to get some kind of mental toughness or some way to reel it back in to go, all right, I got to reset, hit this reset button, because if I go in the tank at this time, we're in trouble. So I need to be able to reel it back in and basically reset, put the reset button on and go from there. And that just comes from mental toughness, practicing things. I can share it, guys. I actually talk to the shot clock. So if I make a call that I'm not 100% sure, I'll literally talk to the shot clock and hit that reset button.
Wow. Okay. So for games where we see calls that we believe are questionable or, you know, the listener actually said bad calls, what happens in that process? Does the league actually review these games? Do they sit down and talk to the referees who were on the court? Is it kind of a thing where it just happened, and as we get to the game and hit that final buzzer, it just gets logged and that's it? What's the process of dealing with those high-intense games where calls come into play?
Well, Malik, there's actually guys who actually sit in New York and actually take a game, a few guys, and they actually literally mark the game from the beginning to end. Missed travels, missed fouls, missed violations, literally, and everyone knows about the last minute report that the NBA has. So whenever mistakes happen in the last 2 minutes, they put those as being important. So they actually log them, and you actually can go online and see those.
Wow. So that's something that I don't think many of us know, is that you could actually go on and see those kind of reports. And so Let's debunk the stereotype, because the next question is, you know, is the league fixed? So I don't know if you want to just answer that straight out, or it seems like you already answered it, is that there are mechanisms in place to ensure that there isn't necessarily a fix, or that those who are just making consistent bad calls are dealt with. Is that the politically correct answer on that one?
I tell you, Malik, you know how hard it would be to referee a game and fix it? Literally go out there, and it would be harder than to make mistakes or really ref a game. So, I mean, from my gut, I can honestly tell you, the fix is not in. It's just tough games. I mean, going out there dealing with these, like you saw, it's just the Sixers. The speed of the game, what's going on, it's a tough job, man. It's a tough job.
No, it literally is. And so what I realized, they get a chance to take a break. There are no chairs for the referees to sit on. So, you know, when a LeBron goes out, the ref is still on the court. You know, and so he takes a break, but you don't. And so he comes back refreshed, and he's speeding down the court. And you've got to have enough in the tank to deal with this refreshed, you know, LeBron in the fourth quarter with 2 minutes left and all kinds of action. So I definitely have a new respect and a full respect for what you guys are doing. Now, this next question deals with the culture of Philly basketball.
Okay.
What is the ref's responsibility, if at all, to make the game better in Philadelphia?
I think it's a twofold thing, Malik. We have to honestly look at the players' actions and the referee's actions. So if you want a referee to come out and give you his best, you got to act professional also. So if you want a professional referee, you need to act professional.
And so that deals...
So what happens is...
You're talking about the management of the league or the tournament? Okay.
Correct. So if I'm wanting a professional referee or giving me the same professional courtesy, you should think about doing the same thing. And then these leagues need to hold these players responsible and stop chasing the dollar.
And so how much of that has become a problem in Philadelphia basketball? I know, you know, there's a lot of Netflix documentaries around, you know, the AAU tournaments and some of these other tournaments that are really just focused on becoming almost like a mill for players. And so if I'm hearing you correctly, it's getting them to return back to the love of the game and the care and concern for the player. Is that correct?
Well, both ways. The players, the environment, their product, you know, they have to respect their product. If they want a great product, they have to treat it as such. So as long as they just chase that dollar and just want to run a league twice a week or whatever and make money, the league's going to be what it's going to be. But you got to hold these guys responsible. And if you do, they'll act right, and then you'll get the better referees in there. Because referees, to be honest, a lot of them are scared. They don't want to come with that type of ball, having to deal with that.
It makes sense. So let's talk about, you know, referees, what they like, what they don't like. What are some of the issues that get under a referee's skin while on the court?
Well, to be honest, Malik, as a ref, that should never bother you. Nothing should really get under your skin. But I mean, you got to think about it like this. There's relationships involved when I'm on the court. So if as a player and referee relationship, you should give me the same thing you want. So once you cross that line, of course, I'm a human being. You know, I'm going to probably react, you know, the way I shouldn't be.
So we're losing a little bit of your comment. It might be when in the background, but you said...
Yes, sir.
You said you want what... Or you want it back from them, basically what you would give them, and vice versa.
Correct.
Okay. So
definitely.
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
No, I was going to say, Malik, that, you know, at times, you know, we're human beings. So we almost have to have that, you know, that same respect. It's got to be a twofold thing.
Agreed. I think that's important. I've watched some local neighborhood games and just league games where things have just gotten out of control really quickly, and it's due to lack of respect on the court on many different fronts. And so I think that's absolutely important. So you're go ahead.
Real quick, Malik. So mm-hmm. let's not get this mistaken. We're talking about like rec basketball. We're not talking
absolutely.
NCAA. We're not talking. So let's make sure we get on the same page.
Absolutely. So you're getting ready. You're traveling now. And most do not understand the process of a ref getting from one city to the next, how you guys go through that process, what the pregame looks like. So tell the listening audience, because this next question basically asks, what is a day in the life for a professional referee? What does that look like, game day?
Well, you know, honestly, from the outside looking in, it looks glorified, but there's a lot to tell. It's waking up, traveling to your city, doing your game. Most of our work is off. We have like a day of game meeting, which might take a couple of hours. Catch a little lunch, a little nap, rest my game that night. By the time I get back in the hotel room, it's probably almost midnight. Knock out a game report. Get to sleep maybe about 1:30. Wake up about 4:35. On to the next city. And then usually we're on a three or four game run. Come mm-hmm. home for a couple of days, right back out.
Wow. So you're saying you do the pregame. What does the pregame consist of? What happens? I know there's a basketball pregame for the player. What's the pregame for the refs? What are some of the things you talk about?
Well, actually, I was going back a little bit, like a day of game, which is earlier, before we even get to the arena. Like, so it might be personnel, teams as a whole, what the league office wants us to make sure is mandated from the league office.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll go back and look at some game reports from the last time these two teams met. So we almost go into the game. It's not a preconceived notion, but what it is, to be aware and be ready to expect what might happen.
Okay, so it's not necessarily a meeting where you're going to determine how you're going to make calls on a specific player or something like that. And so going back to that previous question, there is no fix. The conversation is more about what the tempo of the game may look like, and if I'm hearing this correctly, how to kind of forecast what's going to happen on the court?
Not forecast, but just be aware. So it would be like, I'll give you an example. Like,
mm-hmm.
It would be like you coming to work and not having your topics together for your radio station. Can you imagine how hectic that would be?
Right. Absolutely.
So it's almost in the line of that. So players have tendencies. Coaches have tendencies. So it's basically preparing yourself for those tendencies.
So give us a example of your dealings and management with tendencies, or a particular situation that you've experienced on the court.
I think dealing with like players' emotions at times, you know. So a good example would be if I know a player is high strung, I know I need to basically, you know, nick that in the bud or be able to communicate with him. To be able to, you know, get what I need from him and get this game on an even playing field or get the game going in the right direction.
So give us an example of some of, and I've watched this conversation. You've had dialogue with draft picks. Coaches have even talked to you about you know, how you give advice to draft picks and ensuring that they've heard from you. And so let's talk to the players who are listening. What are some of the things that referees want to say to players that may not always get said, you know, due to the heat of the game or just the relationship that exists? What are some of the things that a referee could advise a player on?
Well, you, to be honest, it's about being able to communicate to them. Everyone, basically, you have to find a happy playing field. So, i.e., being able to communicate would be, I get a good example. I'll give you an old scenario. I was working at NBA Lockout, and I had Phil Jackson come to me because I made a call on Kobe Bryant. And so I saw him coming towards me. So I got my mind ready to be able to have this conversation with Phil. So Phil is walking towards me, and he basically says, "Tim, you can't call Carey on the greatest player on this earth." So something in my mind clicked to where I said, "You know what, Phil? He's not the greatest player on walking this earth. Mike's not out here." So that basically put Phil in a position of being able to be relaxed.
Wow.
So there's a – so it's a way – it's an art to this. You almost have to, like, be able to communicate to get guys to get at ease and not make it – take it personal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't even know if I would have said something like that to Phil, but that's a great retort. And apparently it brought Phil back to earth. So you actually just refereed, because you're really involved in the community, and that's something that I do appreciate and admire about you. You don't just stay high level, and you're not just at the 30,000 foot level, but you come down and have dialogue at the local level on a couple different fronts. But you just got finished attending and refereeing at the Danny Rumpf tournament, and I want to talk about that because that's a tournament that has been near and dear to you, one that you speak of very highly and support. And so I want to talk to the listening audience. I'm sure there are many who know about the Danny Rumpf, but from your perspective, why is the Danny Rumpf so important? And what could a spectator witness and see from the Danny Rumpf? And then also from the player perspective, what can they experience if they were able to attend and play the Danny?
Well, the Danny Rumpf is dear to my heart because of it's for a young guy who was in college. He went to Western Kentucky. He came home. He was playing pickup ball and basically fell ill to a heart ailment. So every year we have this this tournament that's ran at LaSalle University. This year is the first weekend of August. We get NBA players to come out. And then I bring NBA referees and D-League referees out, and we just basically give back to the community.
So what are some of the players who attend the Danny Rumpf? I mean, are they Baker League, you know, quality? Is it neighborhood all-stars? Like, what's the caliber of client or player that you would see?
Well, it's a great mixture of NBA players, overseas pro players, and then you'll get some up-and-coming college players. So it's some great talent out there. I think last year we had James Harden came out last year. Mm-hmm. We had the Morris twins out there, a few other pros from the area or guys who retired recently. So it's a great environment for the kids.
Absolutely. And you are in the process of developing – something that is going to be influential, not just for the community as a whole, but in my opinion, I think it's going to help elevate the game in many ways. And you're starting to develop this training camp for those who are aspiring to be referees and go to the next level. What was your passion around making that a part of your legacy?
Well, the thing is, I know I was given this opportunity to be successful, and I see a pool of referees in the city that really don't have this outlet, and I'm hoping that they want this outlet. But the ones that do, I want to have my door open to these guys to be the best referee they can be, the best referee they can be. And that's where it's coming from there in my heart.
Wow. That's a beautiful thing. And so we're going to continue to promote what you're doing and make sure the individuals that do want to reach out to Tim, make sure you hit us up at Heart City Radio so that we can get your information to Tim. If you're aspiring to be a referee, this is something that's making your heart beat. You look at games and you recognize that, you know what, I believe I have an eye for this and I want to be there. We will do everything we can to ensure that your information gets to Tim Green and you get an opportunity to sit with this living legend. Tim, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. We heard, you know, all the commotion in the background, so we know you are in travel mode. So we wish safe travels to you. I know you'll be in Atlanta for this week dealing with league and ref issues. And so we're proud of you, brother, and continue to keep up the great work.
Thank you so much, Malik, for this opportunity to share. And hey, I love the show. Sounds great. And you keep up the good work, brother.
Thank you, brother. So you have heard from Tim Green, WNBA, D-League, the Sixers officiating. I mean, the list goes on. NCAA, Danny Rumpf. He talked to us about basketball, and if your ear was just tuned to the screeches of the sneakers on the court and the sound of Spalding going up and down, all you heard was basketball through his conversation. But the fact of the matter is he gave us some really, really key points that we can take off the court and put into life. One of the first things he said was, look, there was a mentor who approached me, but I had to first listen, accept what he was saying and what he saw in me that I did not see, and be willing to sit under him and listen more than I talk, and then also learn from him. What was key for the mentor in that was that the mentor was willing to let the young Padawan shine, let them create the space to allow them to develop and grow. One of the other things that Tim said as a mentor is that he would never place the mentee in a position that would ever challenge them. And then work to develop your craft and keep communication going with the league, with the players, develop your rapport. Those are lessons for life. The show, the ball is in your court. Yes, it's in your court. What are you going to do with it? Heart of the City, you can follow us on Twitter, Heart City Radio, Facebook, Heart City Radio, Instagram, Heart City Radio. And as always, feel beautiful. Look beautiful and act beautiful. Why? Because you are beautiful. See you next week.